Now, when I arrived here in Madison in the summer of 2001, one of my very first responsibilities was to figure out what adult education courses that I would teach that coming fall. I immediately thought of this course. It's a classic called Building Your Own Theology. It is a uniquely Unitarian Universalist program in which participants think through the big questions: human nature, the afterlife, your own spiritual autobiography, and of course, the ultimate God. At the end of the course, you write your own credo, or this I believe statement, where you share with others what it is that you actually believe. And as a recent seminary grad, I thought this one would be a breeze, because of course, I was knowledgeable in all of these areas. So I remember setting up the room on that first night. I thought I had it all together. Name tags, check. Craft supplies, check. Chalice, check. Matches, I even got those. I was so ready. Then the first participant came in and said, "I hope we're not going to talk about God tonight because I don't want to waste any time on that. Either you believe it or you don't. There's nothing to talk about." I think I froze. I think I said something totally unintelligible and probably not helpful at all. At that moment, I realized, seminary training or not, I was no expert on theological matters and still had some things to figure out for myself. I learned that night, as our reading said, Unitarian Universalists really get worked up about God. And I remember a very lively discussion where we proved that there really was much to talk about when it came to ultimate reality. Now, I was raised in a family where certain religious matters weren't really a question, but more of a given. Of course you believed in God. We were at Mass every Sunday and 6 days a week when I was in Catholic elementary school. God was more of a distant relative than a powerful force. Invoked at mealtimes and holidays, praised during the good times and solicited during the difficult ones, always present, always close, always available for comfort. I found this to be comforting because I grew up with this belief that I never was truly alone. In moments when I was physically alone, there was always this invisible friend to talk to, who was always there to listen, and as my grandmother would say, always there to give you the correct advice if you would only listen hard enough. It's funny that God's voice kind of sounds like hers, actually. Then there's this concept of salvation, which was another given in my upbringing. Yet one morning, I entered the office of the First Unitarian Church of Philadelphia, where I was a ministerial intern, to find my supervisor waiting for me. And I realized at that moment that perhaps the ideas of salvation aren't really a given. When I entered the office, he turned and said, "So tell me, what saves you?" I said, "Excuse me?" For there was no good morning, no how was the train ride in? No, how did you sleep? No, do you have any meetings today? It was simply, what saves you? And I think my blank stare of confusion caused him to say, "Where is your salvation? How are you saved?" Again, I believe at that moment I was completely unintelligible on the subject. I believe what he was trying to ask me that morning in so many words was, in a world of pain, suffering, disappointment, injustice, what brings the world and you to wholeness again? Living in a fragmented state, in a fragmented world, what transforms you toward a sense of wholeness, a holiness that is the original core of our being? Or maybe he was trying to get at an even larger question, a question about our communities of faith. Because here we do not grant salvation in any traditional religious sense. Unlike my childhood, It's not a given. When you enter into a Unitarian Universalist community of faith, no one is going to say to you, here it is, here's the answer, the one true and right answer for all those questions about God and salvation. Just follow these three easy steps, and it will all be granted to you. We don't have those answers, and it's our job, individually and collectively, to search for the truths together. I have been asked the question of, why would anyone do this? Why would someone attend a UU congregation? What is the purpose of a religious community that doesn't glorify the one true God or give one path to salvation? Why bother? Add into that equation the numbers in our congregations who cringe at the use of the word God and are skeptical of its usefulness in any form and would much rather be thinking about anything else at this very moment. Now, after much thought and much reading into the work of a man named Henry Nelson Wyman, I was able to return to my supervisor with the beginnings of an answer, which I'll share with you in a bit. But first, a little bit about Henry Nelson Wyman. He was a Unitarian Universalist philosopher and a theologian who spent most of his career as a professor of philosophy. He was ordained to the Presbyterian ministry in 1912, but an encounter with Unitarianism in 1949 led him to receive fellowship as a Unitarian minister. And for the rest of his life, he was active in UU congregations and taught at both of our UU seminaries. Wyman spent his entire adult life wrestling with ideas of religious philosophy and theology. In his autobiography, Wyman said that the primary question that absorbed all of his attention for over 50 years was this: what is it that operates in human life with such character and power that it will transform men and women as they cannot transform themselves? What is it that acts in human life that saves them from evil and leads them to the best that human life can ever reach? This man wrestled with questions of God and salvation for over 50 years. And what he came to was that human beings were created for transformation. And he wanted to know what it is that can transform and save us. His answer to that question was very simply, God. But his God was not a supernatural, transcendent, otherworldly personality, separate from us and above us. He said, nothing can transform humanity unless it is actually a part of human existence. Therefore, in human life, in the actual process of existence, the power must be found in the saving and transforming nature which religious inquiry seeks and faith must apprehend. Now, what does that mean? It took me years to figure out what this man was saying. For him, God isn't a noun, but a verb. And that verb is at work in ever-evolving relationships that are transforming, creative, and generate new life. God, he said, is the integrating process at work in the universe. God is the growth that springs anew when old forms perish. Wyman used the words creative interchange to describe this process. And what he means is it is a transformative interaction between people in community. That is his God. And his God has four steps. Isn't that lovely? Creative interchange has four steps. One event, he says, with four stages. Now, here's how he describes it. Bear with me. I'll sum it up in my own words in a minute. It begins with an emerging awareness of qualitative meaning derived from other persons through communication. It moves on to integrating those new meanings with others you have previously acquired. This causes the expanding of the richness of the quality of life, and finally deepens the community among those who participate in a total creative event of intercommunication. Now, what does that extremely long sentence mean? Step one, getting the perspective of another person. Sitting together and listening and sharing in conversation with another. This is how we become aware of perspectives other than our own. We take in another person's understanding without argument, without judgment. We just listen. This is the beginning. Then we move on to integrating this new perspective with what we already know or understand or believe. If you listen to another person, but do not honestly allow their perspective to mix with and possibly influence your own, then it's not creative interchange. But if you listen to another person who has a different sense of the world, a different experience of reality than you do, and you are open, just open to the possibility that it might change how you see things, then that is a creative event. Following this new way of thinking, believing, being, then we receive expanding appreciation. We live differently. We can do more than what we thought we could do alone. You give to me and I grow. I give to you and you grow. And beyond this expanding appreciation is what he calls growing community. Creative interchange in community is when we engage in open dialogue, conversation, deep discussion. That, he says, is where we find the holy at work. And missing the mark, that word my grandmother would say, sin, missing the mark is when we do the opposite. When we close our minds, when we insist on only our way, when we refuse to listen to those we disagree with. Creative interchange is the deep and profound sharing of our ideas, but also our inspirations, our feelings, and our understandings. Simply put, if I have examined my worldview and experienced something from deeply listening to yours, I may have come to integrate these new understandings into my whole being, my whole way of being in the world. And if this is happening to each of us, in the spaces between us, then together we grow as a community that will bring justice, care for the oppressed, in all the interactions of our life. And we do this with deeper relational bonds that keep us part of something holy, sacred, and better than me alone. How does this save us? How does this restore us to our original wholeness? The fragmentation that we experience in the world is often subtle. We come together week after week out of a society whose institutions oftentimes fail to set before our children values that are embracing, compassionate, and responsible. We come together out of a culture that more and more degrades the good, the true, and the beautiful. We come together surrounded by messages of ambition that would destroy the air, devastate the soil, foul the water, a place that has a little sense of responsibility for the common good. We come together from a world that feels less and less related, more and more polarized, in which the language of connectedness, if it is used at all, feels kind of forced and kind of fake. Something precious, something still within us, what Wyman called original, feels more and more lost. Transforming relationship is what delivers us out of this fragmented world, helps restore our original wholeness and turns us to being able to restore the world. Our colleague Victoria Safford puts it this way. If I were asked to confess my faith or my beliefs out loud, and I were scrambling for some good place to begin, I would start in the desert, in the lonesome valley, and say that first of all and ultimately, we are alone. No God, I believe, abides with us, caring, watchful, mindful. The only certainty we have is mystery. We are alone, and because we are alone, it is the chance connections, both chosen and involuntary, that matter most of all and ultimately help and heal and hold us. We are alone, yet intricately bound, inextricably connected to the soil and the stream and the forest, to the sun and the corn and the melting snow. We are alone, yet we are bound by stories we cannot get out of, to ancestors and descendants we will never meet. And all of these natural conditions, these bonds that we didn't forge ourselves but we cannot deny, are the strands of a theology, the seeds of a faith, the beginning of religion, the binding of all things. When I say God, and sometimes I do because sometimes there's no other word that is going to work. When I say God, I mean that place of meeting, that place where solitudes join, the space between my hand and that tree, the space where the tiny feet of the ant brush the dry dirt beneath her, the space between Mercury and Venus, between electrons, which we unblinkingly believe in without seeing. God is the space in between, the bridge between solitudes, the grounds where we meet, you and I or any two, by grace. If I were asked, I'd say that all of us together are alone, and the emptiness between us is waiting to be filled. So to that question of why we are here in this community, I would say this. In this community of the Spirit, we create a place where we accept each other's imperfections, where we reconcile our differences, where we forgive and are forgiven, where we comfort and are comforted, where we love and are loved, where we belong and find a home. And in the space between us, we find the holy, wholeness, God. And to that question from so long ago of what saves me, today, if he walked through those doors and asked, I would tell him this. We are here to enjoy existence, to celebrate this life we share, the one that is blessed by pleasure and pain alike, and we would affirm in the end that it is good. We are here to create community, for we are members one of another. To live in the unending charm of those who people this world with us, who share this ambiguity of human living. And we are here to act as if it depends on each of us. It doesn't, for no one can do it alone, yet it does depend on us. We are here to connect, to be together, to help one another and the world. What else could possibly save us?